I appreciate your patience anytime I preach, but now especially. And we're not going to read the full text from beginning to end because I have two chapters to share with you this afternoon. It's going to be quite a bit, but hopefully we'll move through it quickly, and I won't try to keep us until, 6 o'clock tonight. So, in 1 Samuel chapter 29, but before we go there, I want to say that we as individuals, we're blessed to live in the United States. We have possessions beyond what we need, so much that some folks even make it onto a show called Hoarders. Look, we just have so much, and we're able to gather much more to ourselves, and we can sit on our couch on our phone and buy things on Amazon. We're just super blessed with material things in this nation. And as a church, we're blessed. We don't have to worry about whether there's enough money to keep the doors open and the lights on. We have people that are willing to give time to the function of the church, and most importantly, in the church we have salvation through faith in our Savior Jesus Christ. And are we willing to? And I want to ask this afternoon: are we willing to share these things with others? Our time, our money, our message, the gospel. Are you a generous person? Are we a generous church? These are a few things that I want to consider as we look at a portion of David's life this afternoon. And through this portion of Scripture, I want to assert to you that when God's plan brings blessing to our lives, then we're supposed to take it and use it as a blessing to others. In this text, this afternoon, I want to see 4 points that I have labored over to try to alliterate: a better plan, a bitter pain, a big payoff, and a Belial people. God has a better plan for David in the first portion of the text, all of chapter 29. Don't worry, it's only 11 verses. So, if you would, read with me. It says, "Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rearward with Achish. Then said the princes of the Philistines, 'What do these Hebrews hear?' And Achish said unto the princes of the Philistines, 'Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, which hath been with me these days or these years? And I have found no fault in him since he fell unto me this day.' And the princes of the Philistines were wroth with him. And the princes of the Philistines said unto him, 'Make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place, which thou hast appointed him, and let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul slew his thousands, and David his 10,000s? Then Achish called David and said unto him, 'Surely as the Lord lives, thou hast been upright, and thy going out and thy coming in with me in the host is good in my sight. For I have not found evil in thee since the day of thy coming unto me unto this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's favor thee not. Wherefore now return and go in peace, that thou displease not the lords of the Philistines.' And David said unto Achish, 'But what have I done? And what hast thou found in thy servant so long as I have been with thee unto this day, that I may not go fight against the enemies of my lord the king?' And Achish answered and said to David, 'I know that thou art good in my sight, and as an angel of God, notwithstanding the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Wherefore, now rise up early in the morning with thy master's servants that are come with me, and as soon as ye be up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David and his men rose up early to depart in the morning to return into the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. All right. So we find the Philistines lining up for battle against Israel. And David finds himself in the midst of this struggle because he fled from Israel, from Saul, to the land of the Philistines, to Achish, the king of Gath, because of the persecution of Saul. And he's been living with Achish, and as he's been living in a place called Ziklag that Achish gave to him to live, he's been going out against people that are surrounding the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel has had enemies surrounding them since the time of Joshua, whenever the Israelites failed to force everyone out of the land of Canaan. And now David finds himself fighting against those people, destroying cities and leaving no one alive so that they wouldn't report back to Achish to know what his activities were. And so Achish has put a lot of trust in David. And that's why he finds himself lining up to battle with the Philistines. The Philistines are probably trying to take the Valley of Jezreel because it is a major hub of travel from Mesopotamia to Egypt, with Israel lying in between, and they want control of that, probably for trade, to gain wealth. And so when David finds himself lining up for battle with these men, they're organizing themselves for battle by thousands and by hundreds. And him and his 600 men are at the rearward guard with Achish. They are his personal bodyguards. Achish has put so much trust in David that he has trusted him with his head. We find that in the previous chapter, that he has made him his personal guard. But when he's lining up for battle, the other four Philistine lords, they're looking over their numbers and their groups of people, and they see at the back of them, they see this group of Hebrews, and they go, "What are these guys doing here? Like, those are the people that we're lining up to fight on the other side of the battlefield. What are they doing behind us?" And so they're outraged. They don't understand, and they even recognize David, too. David, one of the most famous Israelites for killing Philistines, they say, "Isn't this David who they've sung songs about? Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000. He even killed Goliath." And that song that they sang, that was about killing Philistines. And so they look behind them and see David standing there with his men, and they tell Achish, "You've got to get rid of this guy, because what better opportunity is this for him to reconcile himself to Saul than to be behind us, killing us, while we're trying to fight against Saul?" And so this is how it goes. Achish has to give in to the other lords of the Philistines. They overpower him. There's four of them and one of him, and he must send David away. And this is where I think that we see God working through these other men to put David out of the battle. He has bigger plans on a grander scheme than just having David in this battle. We found in the previous chapter to this, we have this back and forth going from all the way from chapter 27 through the end of the book of 1 Samuel, finding that it's all one complete story going back and forth between Saul and David. And we found out in the previous chapter that during Saul's portion of this, it's meant for Saul to die in this battle. And so God is moving David out of it in order for Saul to die and for David to be able to return home in order to save his family. And that's where we go to the next part of this. We find first that David endures a bitter pain. It says in chapter 30 and verse 1, "And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites
had invaded the south, and Ziklag had smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captive that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives were taken captives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David, and David inquired at the Lord, saying, Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, Pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. All right, so let's back up again. David and his men were sent away from the battlefield at Jezreel in order to come back through Ziklag, but after 3 days of walking, they come upon their temporary home in Ziklag, and in the distance they can see smoke rising from the city. And as they get closer and closer, they can see that the town has been ransacked and burned. But there's nobody there. Nobody has been killed. There's no bodies laying around. And so they must know that they've been taken captive. But even though they know that nobody has been killed, their families have been kidnapped. And so you have to understand the pain that they are enduring in their hearts. These men, it says, they... They lifted up their voice. And in verse 4, it says, they lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. And what is it? What is the natural reaction to people when we endure suffering, when we endure pain? We want to get angry, and we want to look for an object to place that anger on. And David's men, they turn on him. They speak of stoning him. Who's the guy that led us out against all those hostile nations around Israel? And who's the guy that led us up to battle with the Philistines? It's all his fault. We should stone him. And so David, in his heart, he's enduring the loss of his two wives, and on top of that, he is having to endure his men turning on him. And so he's overwhelmed. But he's a prime example to us of what to do when we feel these kinds of bitter pain and sadness and anger. It's difficult as Christians sometimes to know what to do with our emotions. And I think that David gives us a good example of how to deal with those things. He does not turn in rage on his own men. He does not take it out on other people. He doesn't sit on it and sulk. He takes it immediately to the Lord his God. And I think that that's something that we miss sometimes. It's okay to have bitter feelings, but to take them to the right source and not to use them to try to hurt others. It says that David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. It's taking those things and telling God about them. He already knows that they're there. And so to take them to God, he searches for a solution to these problems. And he prays to God. He prays through Abiathar the priest. I'm sure he's utilizing the Urim and the Thummim, those two stones that give a yes or no answer from God. I'm not exactly sure how those work. Don't ask me. It's not used anymore as far as I know. But But then David's response after he gets an answer too. It's, we have a lot of clear directives from God in his word, and David gives it also a good response to God when he gives us an answer. Follow through with what God's command is. And so when he asks God if he's supposed to go and chase after these people that have taken his family, and God says yes, he acts on it. He goes and he does with the command of God. And so that's where we find that it pays off. He has a big payoff in verses 9 through 20. So let's read that. As it says, so David went, he and his and the 600 men that were with him, and they came to the brook Besor, where those were left behind stayed. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 abode behind, which were so faint that they could not go over the brook Besor. And they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread, and he did eat. And they made him drink water, and they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk any water 3 days and 3 nights. And David said unto him, to whom belongest thou, and whence art thou? And he said, I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me because 3 days agone I fell sick. We made an invasion upon the south of the Kerethites, and upon the coast which belongeth to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, canst thou bring me down to this company? And he said, swear unto me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will bring thee down to this company. And when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. And David smote them from the evening until to the, David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men which rode upon camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil, nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all. And David took all the flocks and the herds which they drave before those other cattle and said, this is David's spoil. So we find that God's plan also included David to come across this Egyptian man. After they reach the brook Besor, where they have to leave behind some of these men that are chasing after the Amalekites, you can imagine that if you were to come home and find your whole family missing, and then you are going out on a chase for the people that you're looking for, it's probably an exhausting chase. You're not going to stop and take a bunch of breaks. And so 200 of these men become so exhausted that they have to stay at the brook Besor. But then, as I said, they come across this Egyptian man who fell sick 3 days ago, the same day that God had told or that God had used the Philistines to put David out of the Battle of Jezreel. This is more of God's plan working together to put David in the right place at the right time. He would not have found this man lying here otherwise. And he's also preserved this man for 3 days and three nights. You can imagine an Egyptian, or anybody, not just an Egyptian, laying out in the wilderness for 3 days sick, not eating or drinking, and there's the potential that he could have been attacked by wild animals or just died from the disease. God's hand was working in this young man in order to direct David to the right people, the Amalekites. And it's also significant that it is the Amalekites that David is going to fight against, because Saul failed to defeat the Amalekites. He was directly told by God to go destroy those people, and He did not do it. And that is one of the reasons we find in the previous chapter, when he is told by the disturbed soul of Samuel, that he's being removed from the throne. But David goes down to this group of people that are spread out into the wilderness. As his band is approaching them, they have the advantage of surprise on this party that the Amalekites are having. They're spread out across the land, and David and his men come across them and crash this thing. And that is where they recover all. They recover everybody's family. All of the Amalekites are destroyed except for 400 men that were able to get away on camels. It wasn't for a lack of David's trying that these men got away, but they recovered everything that was taken from Ziklag, and they recovered everything that the Amalekites had taken from several of the other villages that were surrounding the area of southern Judah. There were a lot of Philistine towns and Judean towns that were ransacked by these people. And so we cannot understate how much stuff David and his men actually took away from this battle. There is a lot, and we'll talk about that a little more in just a second. But before we do that, we have to talk about the return trip. And David tries to teach some of the Belial people that are with him. Verse 21, it says, "And David came to the 200 men which were so faint that they could not follow David, whom they had made also to abide at the brook Besor. And they went forth to meet David and to meet the people that were with him. And David came near to the people, he saluted them. Then answered all the wicked men and the men of Belial, those who went with David, and said, Because they went not with us, we will not give them aught of the spoil that we have recovered, save to every man his wife and his children, that they may lead them away and depart. Then said David, You shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered the company that came against us into our hand. For who will hearken unto you in this matter? But as his part is that goes down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike. And it was so from that day forward that he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. And when David came to Ziklag, he sent the spoil unto the elders of Judah, even to his friends, saying, Behold a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. To them which were in Bethel, to them which were in the south Ramoth, and to them which were in Jeter, and to them which were in, I always mess this one up, Aroer, and to them which were in Siphmoth, and to them which were in Eshtemoah, and to them which were in Rakal, and to them which were in the cities of the Jerahmeelites, and to them which were in the cities of the Kenites, and to them which were in Horma, and to them which were in Korashan, and to them which were in Aphek, and to them which were in Hebron, and to all the places where David himself and his men were wont to haunt." All right. So that was a lot of words for me to struggle through. But whenever they get, I'll try to explain it a little better than I read it. Whenever they get back to the brook Besor with all of this stuff that they have taken back from the Amalekites, there are men among his people that want to spoil the reuniting of these families. They say, this stuff belongs to us because we're the ones that went down to battle. We earned all of it, and we should keep all of it for ourselves. Those guys can have their families back that stayed behind, and they can go away from us. We don't need them. But David's response is the proper response to God's blessing in all of this. And I think David recognizes everything that God has actually done now. He recognizes the plan for David to leave the battle in order to get home in time to Ziklag, in order to go out to the field and find the Egyptian laying there, in order to reach the Amalekites, and God's preservation during the battle to take everything back safely. God has worked a mighty work with them, and He speaks to these wicked men and men of Belial that want to hoard everything to themselves. And he says, "You shall not do so with this stuff, brethren. God has given it to us." And so he makes an ordinance that whenever something like this happens in the future, that it will always be like this. Whenever there is a camp made and people stay behind with the camp, the guards there, they get to share in the spoils of war as much as the others. And he even makes a further example of what should be done with the blessings of God by getting home to Ziklag, and he sends gifts out to the people of Judah that have helped him in the past. And this is where the part comes in that you need to understand how much stuff there actually was. He wouldn't just send like one animal as a gift to an entire city. He sent a lot of stuff out to a bunch of people all over Judah that had helped him while he was on the run from Saul. And that is a good demonstration of generosity. So let's take a minute to just see what this should mean for us. I have this written down, so I'll be doing more reading. First of all, God's plan is always going to overpower our own. It's ultimately a better plan. As David was lining up for battle at the rear guard of the Philistines, we can't be sure what he was planning, but whatever it might have been, God shut it down. He might have found a way to redeem himself in Saul's eyes by attacking the Philistines from behind, but God's plan included Saul being killed in that battle to clear the way for David to be made king. And he returned David in time to Ziklag to save his family from the Amalekites. We see God's hand working on such a broad scale and with such fine detail that through his plan of sending David away from that battle, David partially fulfills a prophecy from Exodus when God had declared war on Amalekites forever. And when the battle is over, Saul's grandson Mephibosheth is crippled to become a key part in a picture of salvation later in David's life. There is such a broad picture with such fine details. And God is working in every little facet of it. Second, when David returns home and his men are contemplating stoning him, he immediately took his distress to God. And I think there's sometimes confusion about what Christians are supposed to do with their emotions. I know that I've been confused in the past about what to do with some of my emotions, thinking it's not okay to feel sadness and frustration. But that's just not true. It's okay to feel those things, but how should we respond to them is the key to it. It's admitting that we need help. It's what David did. He admitted that he needed help to God. He doesn't have a solution to this huge problem in his life, and he needs God's help. And when God does give clear directions on how to respond to that, he is obedient to follow those things. And finally, let's look again at the generosity displayed by David. When everything is said and done, I think David recognized God's plan in sending him away from that battle at Jezreel. We see in this response to the worthless men that want to hoard everything to themselves, he says, "You shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered the company that came against us into our hand. When David recognizes the things that God has blessed him with, he turns around and he uses those things to be generous to others. This is something that we need to be able to do. If we've been blessed with resources, then those resources should not be hoarded. We should actively look outside of ourselves for opportunities to be blessings to other people. We all have something that we can use to help someone else, something as simple as our time, and dare I say, our money. But the most important thing is that we have to share is the message of salvation. Our options on what to do with this message are to either share it with other people, or we can be described as wicked and people of Belial. It's not an easy thing to hear, but it's even more difficult that we've been given clear instruction from God to teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Ghost. We have an example in Saul of what the consequences of prideful disobedience are. God got rid of King Saul. He was brought low. But for David, at this point in his life, he was obedient to God's clear instructions, and he was lifted up in obedience. So the same two options are available to us in God's clear directives to us: obedience or disobedience. All right. Thank you for your attention this afternoon.